You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. We all accept that in this country, when you're charged with a crime, you are innocent until proven guilty. But there are people sitting in jail unconvicted, yet unable to go home because they can't afford to pay their bail. So they're left with two choices. You plead guilty to the crime or you sit there until your case finally makes it to trial. And with many courts so backlogged, that could take months. Bridge Magazine reports about 41% of people sitting in Michigan jails are there because they can't afford bail. And in Detroit, that figure rises to something like 60%. Enter the new Detroit Justice Center. It's joining with the National Bail Project with a mission of helping get these people out on bail. Amanda Alexander is with us. She's the CEO and director of the Detroit Justice Center. Amanda, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Cynthia.
And we want to welcome Rasha Amuleke, who is a bail disruptor. And we're going to talk about just what that means. Rasha, good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
So, Amanda, what is the mission of the Detroit Justice Center?
So our work is to support families who face criminal justice involvement in some way. So starting a bail fund was really an obvious choice for us. As you pointed out, over 60% of people in Wayne County's jails are there pre-trial, meaning they have not been convicted of a thing. And that has several implications. So for the justice system, it totally perverts the presumption of innocence. People can fight their cases much better when they are home. If they are, you know, waiting in jail, awaiting trial, they're more likely to plead guilty just so that they can go home. You know, people could be there, and if they are told, well, if you just pleaded this misdemeanor, if you pleaded this crime, you can go home and tuck your kids in tonight. They're more likely to do that. What we have found is that those are the implications for the justice system, but there are implications for families. So even a night in jail can cause someone to lose their job if they don't show up for their shift. If they are in a bit longer and they miss a rent payment, they've lost their housing. They could lose their children. If they miss picking their child up from school, CPS gets called, a foster care case is opened. So there are just all of these rippling consequences.
And when we say this 60% in Wayne County, we're talking low income, because we wouldn't be if people had the money to be able to post the bail. And enter your work, Rasha, as a bail disruptor.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do?
What I do is help bond people out who typically can't afford it. People that we've identified as eligible for our program have already been identified as indigent, meaning that they can't afford to post their bonds. The median bail income in Detroit we've identified as under $5,000. And so there are people sitting in there for $500, and they would have those devastating consequences that Amanda went into. We not only bond them out, but we provide wraparound services to make sure that they get to court. And usually it's as simple as a court reminder, or if they have issues with transportation, we would work with community partners, such as the Black Youth Project 100 has been a vital piece to be able to provide transportation to our clients, and to refer them to other services that they might need, whether it's childcare or connect them with employment and other services like that.
So you want to, as you say, build this kind of wraparound safety net, because I'm sure that one missed communication and a missed court date and suddenly the situation is very, very dark again for these folks.
Exactly. So a failure to appear in court can turn into a warrant, which is hanging over someone's head. You know, they could be pulled over and right back in the same situation. So we want to provide whatever wraparound supports that we can to make sure that that doesn't happen.
So where does the money come from when you say you go in and you're posting bail for people who don't have it? How does this work? Where does the money come from? And how do you sustain it?
The money has been fundraised over time. We have a national bail fund of over $30 million that revolves. And what that means is that when we post the bail and we follow the history of the person's case, it is then returned to us minus court fees. And then for every dollar that we have, we are able to revolve that back into helping 2 to 3 people every year.
So when you say it's returned to us, just for people who are listening who aren't familiar with how the criminal justice system works.
So we bond people out free of charge. And once they're case has finished, we get that money returned to be able to then circulate it back to help other people.
You know, bail fund is one way of dealing with cash bail and low-income defendants. But what, Amanda, I'll start with you, a true lasting reform look like in your view?
Yeah, I think that this is all part of a stopgap effort to...
image of plugging your finger in
exactly,
the holes in the dike.
Exactly. I mean, this is an act of solidarity with, you know, low-income people in our community who are disproportionately impacted by this problem. But it's a temporary measure, we hope, on the way to ending cash bail entirely, ending pretrial detention. I think it's part of a larger issue of rethinking the wisdom of jails, you know, in this country. If we were to get everyone out of pretrial detention in Wayne County, we'd be down to about 750 people. Right now, Wayne County is moving to build a new jail that would house 2,200 adults and a youth detention center of 160 beds. And so I think that people are pausing and rethinking, do we need jails or could we be reinvesting in other things? And that's a much heavier lift. You know, I think, remaking the justice system. But this is one piece of that work.
And when you think of the climate in America in 2018, does it seem like a heavier lift?
In some ways, yes, but in others, no. I mean, I think for a long time, families have been going through this quietly. So even though it's shocking to some people that this is the state of our justice system in our jails, I think for the families that have been living it day to day, it's nothing new to them, and they are getting more and more organized and, you know, exercising. I think there's a strong voice around change in the criminal justice system these days, and that's not going away. That's only picking up.
Rasha, take us into the world of someone who is stuck there in a jail cell, pretrial, not convicted, and doesn't have the money. What is life like for them and for their families?
Well, I can provide an example of a story that kind of really stayed with me. One of our clients, who has three children, was incarcerated for about a week. He not only lost his own job, but his domestic partner also had to quit her own job to take care of the kids. So they went from a two-income household to none. And that's just a small example of just how devastating those impacts can be.
I think it really drives home, too, the impacts on not just that individual, but their entire family. Mm-hmm. So as you see, this is a family that went from two incomes to no incomes over a few days in jail. And we see that day in, day out. In another case of someone that rebailed out, it was a young man in his early 20s, and every day that he was in for about a week because of $500 that his family couldn't afford. He was missing his job. He was missing school. His family couldn't afford the bail. They also could not afford to put money on a phone card to communicate with him. So he was trading his breakfast and lunch every day to be able to use someone else's phone card to call home. So that is the level of poverty of families caught up in the system. And, you know, again, these are not outlier cases. These are cases that happen hundreds of times every week.
And again, just to be very clear, we are talking about people who have been accused of a crime, not convicted. So legally, they are innocent.
Exactly.
What's at stake here? I can tell just by hearing you and seeing you that this work matters so much to both of you.
What's at stake is the destruction of a community because of their economic status. The fact that this has been a two-tiered system of justice. These are allegations at this point, and people deserve a day in trial to see their case through and to prove their standpoint.
It's very easy to say, fine, I just want to get out of here. I'll plead guilty to this misdemeanor. I just want to go home. And then you have a conviction.
And then you have a conviction on your record, and that follows you. Whether it's looking through employment, trying to get a loan, these are devastating impacts with real people being involved that most people, if they're not living it, don't even consider.
And Amanda, I know this is the Detroit Justice Center, but this is the fact that you're part of the National Bail Project. This is a countrywide issue. We're feeling this in every corner of the country.
Yeah, there's a growing national movement around ending cash bail. I think that that is something that, you know, people across Michigan, you know, can certainly take up. There's a broader look at, you know, jails themselves and the need for them versus other types of community investment. It's part of a much broader conversation. I think cash bail's days are numbered. I think that there is this growing consensus that this is no way to run a justice system. But we're also very concerned about what would replace cash bail.
Yes, because I'm wondering, is it being done in other parts of the world where you could point to somebody and say, look how that's working?
Well, I think it's only the U.S. and the Philippines that do cash bail like this. So the other parts of the world are far ahead. But I think in certain jurisdictions in the U.S., so Washington, D.C. is one place that people look to. Basically, the data has proven out that you do not need money bail to get people back to court. All you need is a simple court reminder, so a text message. And instead, what we're seeing is sometimes when we bail out clients, they then have to get an ankle monitor, so a tether. They have to pay $200 to get that installed and then $100 every month to maintain it. And again, these are people with a presumption of innocence. So we had a young boy who was bailed out about 17 years old and had to report right away to get this ankle monitor put on. He's going to have to wear this around his ankle all summer. He's not going to want to wear shorts in this 95-degree weather. He can't submerge the tether, so he can't go swimming with his friends. These are the types of things that, you know, people are facing when they are presumed to be innocent. And so more surveillance is not the answer. We do not need to replace the money bail system with a system of, you know, in-home surveillance.
So what do we replace it with?
Like I said, court reminders. So just, you know, sending people a simple text message has been proven to get people back to court, and also supportive services. So we know that people were already on the brink, you know, if this is the arrest that pushed their family over. And so our hope is that with the holistic support of the Detroit Justice Center and the Bail Project and our community partners, we can really kind of get them back on track.
Amanda Alexander and Rasha Amuleki are with the Detroit Justice Center, working with the National Bail Project to help get people out on bail who cannot afford it otherwise. Thank you so much for sharing your work with us on Stateside.
Thank you.
Thank you.